Oh my gosh, that is a zero. Just link. Yeah, hello. Hello and welcome back to Debatable, a fake television show where all of the bits that we did the first time around are mercifully, I think, lost in the dustbin of history,
yes.
Which means that I segue to a story that is very serious and messy, but also, I think, absolutely worth our time, Alabaster. We get another run at that. So please give us a clean start for our audience.
Yes, we are going to start with the ever-evolving Deshaun Watson story. He settled 20 of the 24 civil lawsuits he was facing for sexual misconduct. And our question for you is, what effect, if anything, does Deshaun Watson settling 20 of the 24 civil cases change for him moving forward?
So these were announced, the settlements, 20 of the 24 cases being settled. That was all announced by Tony Busby, the attorney for the women in question. Ashley Solis, notably, the first woman to make the accusations of sexual misconduct, is not one of those 20 women. There are four cases. She is one of them. Outstanding. There are also other allegations from other women who never went to court or to the police who have said corroborating stories. So, to me, my first reaction when I heard this was, okay, so Deshaun Watson, who had said a couple months ago, I believe, that this was a thing he was going to fight, that this was not about the money, this is about his good name, and he wanted to clear that. That strategy clearly, guys, has changed because he has settled 20 of the 24 civil lawsuits. And I think also just like when you say the number 20 of 24, I already feel myself growing a little numb to it. It's like a bed of nails thing. It's like we've all gotten numb to the dozens of women here. But the fact that 20 civil suits have been settled tells me that he knows that this is not a thing he can fight in this way. And that the idea that, hey, there is money to be handed to these women, I do already want to preempt some of the sort of skepticism. Like, well, the women got the money they were searching for. Well, like, that's kind of what happens when you file a civil lawsuit, right? It's not about criminal conduct in this case. It's about how do you get something for the alleged crime, the alleged misconduct, the allegations that have been visited upon you. And so here's Tony Busby's statement, quote, "Today I announced that all cases against Deshaun Watson, with the exception of four, has settled. Yes, period. We have not heard from Deshaun Watson or his lawyers yet. But I see this as a development that does not change how I thought about the story, big picture, but it does feel like the next logical step that I'm surprised took this long to get to."
Yeah, I mean, it's a negotiation. A settlement is normally a negotiation. So, I mean, that might explain why it's taken this long and it's still not over. I think all of our opinions are probably pretty well calcified by now. So people who want to argue that this was some sort of elaborate gold digger plot, they already believe that, and this isn't going to change that. And the people who believe the many, many claims from the women, those things are not going to change either. So I'm not sure what it changes. The one thing that is going to impact us is all of us and the people who cover the sport and people who are in the league is the suspension. So maybe the settlements will have some impact on the punishment that he receives. I'm not sure. I mean, we haven't gotten much reporting on what we expect the punishment to be. And as you mentioned, Pablo, we're already past the criminal proceedings. So this is going to be at least part of the price that he pays is the check that he signs over to these women.
Yeah, some of the reporting that we're hearing is that it would be a significant, potentially significant suspension from the league, right? Like, could be upwards of a year-long suspension, whatever. I agree with both of you in that, like, this is not going to change much because the whole reason that Deshaun Watson has been able to exist and not just exist but thrive, right, historic money, is in the gray area. And that's the dangerous part of sexual assault allegations, is that for the accused, all they have to do is create enough gray, enough that you can feasibly side with the accuser or with the accused. And that's exactly what they've done here, right? They just, they do what they always do by saying, well, Deshaun Watson's people, well, look, in the court of law, nobody thought there was any criminal negligence. So that alone, as far as the civil stuff, they're chasing money. And now they can say, we settled these things. As you can see, if they truly were, you know, sexually assaulted, if they truly felt some type of way, they wouldn't have settled. They would have. But to your point, Pablo, that's the point. Like, that's why you go to civil, is to settle monetarily and financially. That's why the civil courts exist. So I think that, no, like, it's, I've talked about this ad nauseum, guys, and I really, I mean it when I say, I have never felt more cringy about how to cover an athlete? Because we know that there have certainly been plenty of athletes that are not Boy Scouts. I mean, we've had to cover Ben Roethlisberger, who was also accused of, you know, sexual misconduct, sexual assault, rape. But it feels like what are we supposed to do? Like, even if he's suspended, right? Even if he's suspended for a year and he comes back, how does it feel fun and good to put him on a fun, punny sports center? Who are the MVP? Like, how does that feel okay? And at the end of the day, if everybody moves on and everybody settles and he's allowed to return to his job, it is our job to talk about him. And so it's not fair to him, right? Necessarily in that scope, to consistently bring up the allegations against him on an arbitrary Sunday where we're showing highlights, but it just still feels like you're glossing over the pain of these women. But I just don't know what to do, you guys. It's like a crisis of conscience, if I'm being honest.
No, I don't think there's a way, Dominique, I don't think there's a way around the inherent just like grossness of this. Like, it's always going to be part of his story and it should remain part of his story. And the other gross part of this is that already, because we have not heard from Deshaun Watson and his attorneys, right? Like, already I'm thinking to myself, well, okay, let's presume there was a logical strategy here. And I want to add in a quote from Brian McCarthy, the NFL spokesman here, about the settlements today. Quote, "Today's development has no impact on the collectively bargained disciplinary process," end quote. Well, what does that really mean? That also seems like kind of vague political language. But to me, if you were in Deshaun Watson's camp, why do you settle today? It's because you have been getting wind, because Elle referenced this report in the Washington Post by Mark Maskey, indicating that maybe a year-long suspension is in the offing here. It seems like some combination of the way Deshaun's contract with the Browns shook out, right? Which was defiant. It was a defiant, almost cutesy contract, playing on how he does not have to suffer the penalties of the court of public opinion in his checkbook, right? And then he gets wind that, okay, wait a minute, the NFL kind of wants this to not be at the forefront anymore, which means that these outstanding civil suits are undermining my ability to get onto the field. It all feels like this is how he's calculated the path of least resistance back onto the football field. I don't know if it's a good strategy. I just know that it comes from a place of wanting to minimize something that, in the public opinion, really should never be minimized.
Yeah, the interesting part about this is one that Elle started to touch on a little bit. And I think we have to acknowledge that the world has changed some. And while we can't say that Me Too has like shifted the way that women are treated in society to like some level of equality, I can say, like, personally, it's shifted the way that I feel it's appropriate for me to behave. So I think Ben Roethlisberger is the point that's brought up often, or the like counterpoint that's brought up often. And when I talked about Ben Roethlisberger, I did not feel compelled, honestly, to bring up, I mean, many years after, I didn't feel compelled to bring it up when he was playing. And I mean, Tyreek Hill's another one who, like, I've done cutesy packages, like Elle said, about how fast he is and how much pressure he puts on the defense. But he has some really bad allegations, and I did not feel compelled to bring that up prior to Me Too movement. And now, like, at least for me, I can speak for myself, it feels different now. And it might be because Deshaun Watson hasn't been back on the field and it hasn't been enough time. But to me, it feels like worse now. And I guess it feels like the like social mores have shifted in some degree, at least in my circle of friends, have shifted to some degree to the point where it feels wrong to do those packages in light of what has happened, in light of like how we treat people who are accused of these sorts of things. So maybe that'll change in time, but like, I have a hard time. And when we do pre-show meetings, for shows not this one, where we're talking about what we're going to talk about, because of course we don't prepare for this show
at all.
Like Deshaun Watson in the Browns. The Browns have been an interesting story that we've written on these other shows for a couple years now. What's going to happen with the Browns and their super team and Baker Mayfield? And now there's a new, incredibly interesting football dynamic added on. But when producers come to me and like, hey, let's talk to Deshaun Watson today. And I'm like, so we talking about these allegations? And they're like, oh, we just want to keep it to football. Like, I feel like I'm selling out. I feel like I'm doing something wrong. And it's not something that I've done. I haven't yet talked about Deshaun Watson on TV without at least mentioning the allegations.
100%.
Because I feel like I can't sleep at night. So maybe that change, maybe that'll change in the future, the same way that, like, we don't bring up Ray Lewis's issues anymore. We don't bring up anybody else's issues after a certain time. Maybe it'll change for Deshaun Watson, or maybe it won't.
Yeah. Alabaster, I feel like we could continue talking about this, but part of me also just wants to wait for the next development in this story, right? Yes. Like, this is one of the things where everything I want to say about how this should be taken seriously, how the New York Times reporting should be read, go read Jenny Prentice's reporting about how Deshaun Watson hired 60 plus masseuses, clearly some of whom has probably pretty definitively established that sex was involved. Actually, forget the probably, definitively established that. Like,
yeah.
Go read about this. We'll return to the story.
Yeah. Pablo, again, you failed so miserably at the segue at the beginning of the show, and no one got to hear it. So I'm going to, can I take this segue? Okay,
please.
With all due respect, with all due respect, it was important to talk about, but Alabaster King, can we live?
Yes. There we go. Right there. Well done. Well done.
That thing.
All right. And
that, Pablo.
Let's go to some golf. And today we had news from Colin Morikawa and Brooks Koepka. Morikawa decided to stay with the PGA Tour while Brooks is leaving for the money. And my question for you guys, is it a big loss for the PGA Tour that Brooks Koepka is joining the LIV Tour?
It's a loss in the sense. Okay, what? Why are you raising your
hand? No, I'm sorry. I just want to get on Alabaster because we go from one serious heavy topic to the illusion of a not serious heavy topic. Yeah. But in actuality, what lies under this is homophobia and journalists being cut up with bone saws and all of that stuff. We just want to play some golf. Like, I don't know. Just want to play some golf. All right, Pablo, please go ahead.
Yeah, let's get to the light stuff. Let's get to the fun stuff. The part where I mentioned the 9/11 commission. So the Saudi Arabian backed LIV Tour is something that is not going away in any sense. What Brooks Koepka's defection indicates is that much. And he is a name that people know. He is a name that is significant. He is a name that has proven that shame is not any sort of effective guardrail against what the PGA is trying to avoid. And look, I have Dominique and I have talked about this, L, for a long time. No love lost here for the PGA. Like, they have their own history that is sorted. There is no moral high ground that they can sort of stand atop with any sort of true cleanliness of conscience. But what they are realizing is that, man, seems like none of these golfers really care about Saudi Arabia
the PGA,
thing as much.
PGA has a real clean conscience if you're comparing them to the Saudi government. But I'll let you go, El, see what you think about this before I take us in a less fun, more concerning direction.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that we've done this whole, well, what about China? Well, what about the NBA? You know, it's all just dog whistling. At the end of the day, the PGA is about, right? Like, what is the PGA about? Prestige. It's about tradition, right? Like, golf in general is all of those things. And I think they just really overestimated the prestige around PGA. I think they overestimated people's ability to want to just get these checks off. Like, Brooks Koepka's made a ton of money. I think, $38 million on the tour, but only $1 million last year. He hasn't been winning. It's LIV really opened up an opportunity for guys who might, you know, win here or there, but haven't had a consistent. I think Morikawa defecting would have been really huge because he looks to be the future of golf. He's young, he's well-received, he's well-liked. Right now, the guys that have sort of defected are very controversial and polarizing on the PGA Tour. They're guys who can't win consistently. Brooks Koepka's brother already joined the LIV Tour. The most annoying part about this story to me is that Brooks Koepka stood and clutched his pearls just last week, right? And acted like, and what they're doing is they let the Phil Mickelsons and the DeChambeaus and the Dustin Johnsons of the world take the brunt of criticism, take all the shit, and then he swoops in last minute as other people are defecting. So I don't like the whole cosplay of like, how dare you bring up LIV to me? I haven't even thought about it. And then days later, you're joining the tour. But this is, you know, listen, I don't care about golf on almost any level. And so if this sort of intrigue and back and forth is drawing people into golf, it feels like a win for both, right? Sort of having the dark forces versus the Jedi.
In theory, I mean, look, as a journalistic subject, it's very interesting, Dominique. Right. I don't think this is building audience, though, for golf in totality.
Yeah, that's my point. And so we all believe that aligning yourself with the Saudi government is not good. And I'm fine with all the ridicule that comes on these players for doing so. What I'm not comfortable with is the PGA Tour trying to use this as a Trojan horse to really just continue to consolidate their like monopoly power that they have as it stands in professional golf. So the reason why it's interesting is because they are introducing a new system in order to give their golfers more opportunity to make more money, where they are just kind of replicating some of the live golf like strategy and bringing to light or bringing to fruition things that golfers had wanted in the past. So what this speaks to me is that the golfers are pushing for like more ways to make money. A big star like Brooks Koepka should not have to, at least in his view, I would assume, should not have to win a major tournament to make tens of millions of dollars, since people are tuning in, paying tens of millions of dollars for to see him. So they're giving in, it seems, to the LIV Golf Tournament. And that's why it's scary for them, is not because I think that LIV Golf is going to take over the PGA Tour. It's because I think we only, as a sports watching public, only have certain amount of bandwidth for watching golf.
Yeah.
If we are giving any of that over to the LIV Golf Tour and taking it from the PGA, that's going to impact their money in a big way. And if they're taking any stars, like, it's all bad for them. This to me seems like something that they should have preempted and like helped out the players the way the players wanted to, so that they were not an attractive group to snipe.
Right. So Alabaster puts this card down, which is helpful. Dominique was referring to some of these, the changes, yeah, right, that the PGA Tour is going to implement. No, but it's clumsy what they're doing, right? 8 limited field, no cut events with $20 million purses each for the top 50 finishers in the prior season's FedEx Cup. All of that sounds well and good, I believe. But the bottom line here is that the Saudi Arabian government has so much more money than the PGA. Yeah.
Yes.
Literally billions of dollars that they could draw from, right? And so the PGA should be worried, because it turns out that all of these golfers would like guaranteed paychecks that aren't affected by whether they win or lose, right? And also they should be worried about the fact that, as L, you were alluding to, right? Like, the PGA, what they sell is history. What they sell is prestige. What they sell is this continuity of golf history.
Excellence,
and,
yes,
and excellence and all of these things, the decorum of golf, the etiquette, and all of that is being changed and insulted and blown up by a Saudi Arabian government-backed tour. And what they're going to have to do, you know, the way that the PGA Tour can fight this is to try and make those tweaks that we just discussed. It also can try to establish that, as Dominique so elegantly put it earlier, that they are better than the Saudi Arabian government as a moral accounting concern goes. But really, like, the question is going to come down to, is Brooks Koepka going to be fielding questions from, as we've heard Phil Mickelson field questions, people asking stuff on behalf of, like, the widows of 9/11. People asking questions on behalf of gay people who have been persecuted and punished and jailed. Like, are they going to have to answer those questions, or are we all going to get kind of tired of that and get to the golf thing? And I think what everybody is sort of realizing is we're going to do that golf sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
Alabaster, I feel like we need to get to the fun stuff now. For the love of God.
Okay.
Bring that.
We can move on to the NBA draft. Where this is a fun NBA draft this year, because unlike years prior, we don't really know who's going to be the number one pick. We don't know who's going to be the number two pick or the number three pick. There are three aliens, guys who are really tall and really skilled and really unique at the top of this draft. And everyone has a different opinion, including maybe the Magic. And my question for you, if the Magic really don't know who they want with the number one pick, shouldn't they consider trading down?
So the NBA draft, the run-up to it is fun to me because everyone is just lying flagrantly. Everybody, like, there are, like, secrets about, like, who's working out whom, who's published. It's like the Pacers are publishing a list of, like, here's who we worked out. And that counts as radical transparency because everyone else is just trying to smokescreen their way. And this applies, by the way, to the team with the number one overall pick, because this is Magic president Jeff Weltman saying yesterday, quote, "Still early in the process. Dialogue is always ongoing. Dude, you have the number one pick. Like, no one's going to leapfrog you here. You get to decide everything that's going to happen." So maybe they're negotiating for a trade down. Maybe that is so. Jabari Smith seems to be the guy that they like. If they don't like him, should they trade down? Absolutely. But far be it for me to tell them that, like, the kid they like is actually someone they shouldn't like, because God knows if I know anything about how good that kid is.
I mean, to trade down would show a level of humility that I don't think that I think would be like framed as cowardice, which no one wants to be framed as. But like, honestly, as I see it, there's three guys. Nobody really knows who the best one's going to be. Normally, the NBA draft is pretty clear who the best prospect is. You draft them, you move on. And sometimes you're wrong. But no one gets fired or no one is embarrassed if we all understand the consensus is there's this one guy. But now there's a problem because the consensus is kind of like there's three guys. And if you are smart, I guess, and humble, you're like, yeah, if they are like, if there's no fit that makes you feel better, then the humble thing would be there's no difference. I can't tell because no one can really tell. And I'll take some more compensation to move back within that three. But also, I mean, why'd you get this job? The whole reason why anybody gets this position is to get the number one overall pick and to make picks. So like, I wouldn't do it. But everybody just wants to get Victor next year, Wembanyama, right? That's how you do it?
Yeah, yes. Also, okay.
That's all I want to talk about.
Spider. Yeah, I know. Victor Wembanyama, the French kid who's like the best prospect since LeBron, is coming next year. That's what everybody's really interested in. But Dominique just framed something for me, Elle, that I do want to sort of seize on, which is there are three picks at the top that are all kind of interchangeable, but they're all kind of like the different members of a boy band. Some of you like, ooh, Jabari Smith, he's like the shooter type. Right? He's consistent. He doesn't need to dribble, really. He's like a giant Klay Thompson. Oh, Paolo Banchero. He's the big, strong guy. He's the guy with the muscles. Maybe you like that kind of guy. Or do you like the 195-pound, 7-foot-1 dude who looks like an alien but is maybe kind of the toughest of all despite his physical appearance? So I don't know which way you go, but you can't really go wrong with the top three.
I didn't tend to like the alien one when I was a young girl putting the posters on my wall. I tended to not want to go for the freakishly tall one because in the true boy bands, there's like the old one. I wish we had an actual NBA draft.
What type of boy bands are we talking about?
Who's the old one?
All know who the old one was in NSYNC.
Yeah.
No, we don't.
Yeah, Joey Fatone.
Joey Fatone.
Yeah, he was the old one.
Obviously.
Yeah. And then what was the one that was just like, so there was always the old one. Okay. And then the old one on Backstreet Boys was, AJ? Yeah.
AJ.
So we're only talking white boy bands because white boy bands always have like a cool one too.
Yeah. But it's hard to tell who's the old one. But it's hard to tell who's the old one in the black boy bands because, you know, black don't crack, Fox. They all look young.
That's fair. But I guess I was just asking because there is a like Timberlake. Like, oh, he can dance and maybe rap a little bit.
He's the young baby one. He's the Joey McIntyre. He's the Aaron Carter. He's the baby one, right? He's the, I guess he wouldn't be Bobby Brown. God, you're right. Maybe for black boy bands, they don't have a typical
Did
blueprint.
Did we just
like we've
make
seen from the
Chet
white.
Holmgren Bobby Brown, Alabama?
No.
Is that
no,
why you're interjecting here?
Well, no. So I'm interjecting to seize off a point that was far before the boy band stuff. It was about Victor and how he's, you know, the best prospect since LeBron, and he's been comped to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar mixed with Giannis, et cetera, et cetera. We were actually just looking. There have been a lot of best prospects since LeBron. We had Anthony Davis. We had Andrew Wiggins. We had Zion Williamson. We had Ben Simmons. And there's like a 25% hit rate on those guys actually being great NBA players. So it's like pretty interesting.
I mean,
that these teams are tanking for 14% chance next year.
But do
of getting
we know
Victor
that they're
Wembanyama.
Doing that? But do we know that they're doing that, Alabaster? I think it's just more. I think it more speaks to like. Listen, I saw a comp the other day for Banchero and for Jabari Smith that said that they project to be, you know, plug and play, sort of sturdy, you know, shooters. Like you can put them in and they'll contribute. They comp them as like a Harrison Barnes. Ah, so I think Chet Holmgren has probably the largest ceiling and the lowest floor, right? I mean, he's like legitimately Gumby. We wanted to give Kevin Durant that name, Durantula, but this dude is an actual spider. And I think it just speaks more to the idea that like, this isn't one of those drafts that just has any surefire bets, more so than just tanking for next year, because at the very least, they feel like there's something
there are surefire bets. They just aren't like surefire, like build your team around centerpiece bets, which like rarely come up through the draft. And sometimes they do and we don't find them. Like it's not every year that you get a guy like that, which is why I do think that the Victor Wembanyama stuff is real. Because when you start looking into drafts in the future, and I know we should talk about this draft, but I don't want
Well, this draft is kind of about that draft, Dominique, because Alabaster asked this question about like about tanking for next year, and the team that has all of the moves to make here to deploy is the Oklahoma City Thunder.
Yeah.
They have like a dozen of other teams' first rounders or something like that. Something insane through like 2055 or something. And the point is, like, they could be the team the Magic trades with for the number one overall pick this year. But I don't think they want the number one overall pick this year, because I think they want Victor Wembanyama. They want the guy, the French kid that we've now said a million times on this show, despite the fact that he's not in this draft. And so should they consider trading down? Sure, consider it. But I don't think teams are going to give you the king's ransom that you think you want for a number one overall slot.
And basketball scouting, I mean, to me, feels different. It's so rare that you get these top prospects that just completely flop. Like, sometimes it's injury or something else. Like, when we say this guy's going to be real, it's normally true. Like, it's not like football or anything else. It's so easy. The game is so similar in earlier stages. And you play against such great talent earlier. It's like, yeah, he's playing against other guys who will be in the NBA. So he's playing against his comp now. If he's killing his comp now, he's going to continue to kill his comp when he gets to the NBA. It's not at all like football or baseball or other sports where we have to like project. Because if you're balling in college football, you might every other week, if you're in a great division, you might go up against an NFL guy. That's not the case when you're in playing international ball or you're in AAU. Like, no one goes to their local high school except for Zion, and he was a baller too. No one goes to their local high school and dominates the kids in their neighborhood anymore.
Yeah, for as much as there is the Anthony Bennett, Michael Olowokandi, the number one overall picks who flopped, if you look at who becomes like an all-time great, these guys come from the lottery.
We know they
come from this particular stratosphere.
Ooh, I have a pop quiz for you guys.
That word, by the way, I love that word. Never gonna let it die. My rookie year. This guy, I don't want to say his name and embarrass him, but we had to wear ties my rookie year in Denver. He came over to my locker and was like, "Natatafu," and I was like, "Huh? Natatafu?" Then he pointed to his neck and said, "Natatafu." So he was saying, "You know how to tie tie." So I managed to tie the tie for him and gave it to him. But on another time, he was like trying to hit on a girl or something at a club. And the girl was with someone on the team. He's like, "Man, I should have knew that was your girl."
Oh, no. Was he from Mississippi?
He was from, I don't want to say. I don't want you to be able to narrow it down. I'll text you on the side.
I'm going to go Mississippi, Arkansas, potentially. Texas.
It sounds like a bayou. Gulf. I'm getting some
bayou in there. Yeah, maybe a Gulf.
Maybe I'm doing
a Cajun adjacent. You're doing like a bad Gambit
accent
from X-Men.
Yeah, I don't know.
Oh my God. You guys, one time,
and confusing, but I loved it.
One time I came into SportsCenter and it's like 4 a.m. and this is after, the racial draft. And so, you know, everyone was trying to be really, really aware about making sure they just checked with the Black person in the room to make sure that they were okay. So my producer is like, "Hey, Elle, we were wondering if we were debating. We think that Alvin Kamara like tweeted something. We think it was a typo. We were going to run it, but we aren't sure. Someone said that it's not. I was like, just show me the tweet. You guys, it said something like, you know, yeah, like we in there. You know what I'm talking about? It was talking about T-A-L-M-B-O-U-T, which of course is like very common vernacular. I was like, talking about. And they were like, did he mean to write that? And I was like, yes, he's basically saying like, do you know what I'm talking about? Like, you feel me? Like,
oh my gosh.
Yes. And I was like, you guys, and I was so shocked. I mean, there's two Americas. I was so shocked that they had never, like a whole group of people had never understood the reference Tombaugh. And I was like,
I can't imagine a Twitter feed that doesn't have Tombaugh in it.
That's what I'm saying.
For you to understand. At least Google it once. Like, you don't have one Tombaugh in your whole, like,
nobody
of the thousands
uses
of people you Tombaugh follow.
Exactly.
You don't have one friend who says, "Nah, I'm Tombaugh."
I just like the idea of someone going on incognito mode on their browser and going to Urban Dictionary being like, "All right, time to figure out whatever the hell these people are talking about."
You don't need to go on incognito mode. Just go ahead and check. I mean, that's essentially what they did. They did something more embarrassing than check is go ask a Black person. I kind of think it's hilarious, but I kind of respect it. Like,
I do.
I kind of do too.
Better to be safe than sorry. They were so scared.
Like, either he is drunk and just pressing a bunch of letters, or this is some sort of black vernacular
I don't understand.
Let's see.
Can we put this on television without accidentally referring to a sex move?
One of my favorite, we are way off on a tangent now, but one of my favorite things about sports is when guys are making gestures or motions that are like referring to something illicit and no one knows it. And they just put them out there and they're like celebrating. And they're like, I feel like the whole wiping of the nose thing, like we've been doing that where guys do this. We've been doing that and just putting it on TV for many years.
There is like, oh, he can smell the victory. Yeah. Like, that's not what that means.
At all. Next topic. I don't want to ruin it for anybody. Let's talk
for
about
sure. They were
close out
victory.
Clay.
Yes.
Yes. Let's talk about Parade Clay. I mean, the Warriors have had a lot of these parades. So we have some competition here. My question for you guys, what are the chances Clay had the best Warriors championship parade performance ever? We have a clip.
Ooh.
Let's watch. Beautiful day on the Yoshione.
Oh, no! I lost my hat.
That hurts. That hurts.
Boom!
Got her. Oh man.
Yes. Okay.
Why was it unprompted? Or is he known for that? Like I'm confused.
I have never seen that man do that before in my life.
Were people yelling like give us a Michael Jackson? Yeah. Like what is he drinking where he just is possessed to suddenly...
I don't think he's necessarily drinking so much as he is digesting or inhaling.
I imagine someone from the crowd yelling, "We won't stop. Don't stop till you get enough, Clay." And then he was right? And then he hit him with a, I don't know, right? That makes sense. Yeah.
I love...
You off the wall, Clay.
You're off the wall. What did you say to those Celtics? Just beat it. Come on, Clay.
It doesn't matter whether you're black and white.
Because you are the man in the mirror. And that's all that matters.
Oh gosh, so good, man.
Championship parade, or is it the best Warriors? Oh yeah, I guess this is.
Not
the best championship. I feel like the Eagles probably had the best championship performance.
Unhinged.
We had like
the Eagles. Yo, in Philly, they announced we are greasing the light poles so people cannot climb them.
Yeah.
And then people climb them anyway. And I feel like that kind of captures the spirit of, Lane Johnson dressing as like that thing. Or Jason Kelce.
Oh, yeah, that was Lane Johnson. I thought it was Kelce that was dressed like that.
No, Lane Johnson was wearing like a dog head, but Kelce was maybe dressed like a Mario character. Was that the kind of thing?
Yeah, like I think it was like a Swami type of thing that he was going. I don't know. It was a mess and it was crazy and unhinged, as you mentioned before.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with yes. Yes. It's a huge chance. A 100% chance. You know, my favorite part is that this whole entire championship has really touched my heart because it's been incredibly petty. And I'm a firm believer that all of those garbage ass, mottos and sayings and, act like I've been there before, show some sportsmanship, be a graceful winner. That's crap you teach children, right? Because it is important when they're kids so that they grow up to not be asses. But at the same time, you're not going to tell a grown ass person, especially one that just won a championship, how they should act or conduct themselves when they win a championship. So I love that they are so incredibly petty and gloating. My favorite part is that it's not just for the Celtics fans or the Memphis Grizzlies. They're doing it to each other because what was not witnessed in that clip, maybe you guys showed it on the show. You couldn't have shown it on the show yesterday, is when Clay is talking during, like they're addressing the crowd and Steph and Draymond are just laughing at him to like hysterical degrees because I truly believe he meant it when he goes on this riff about the respect you feel when you walk into a restaurant and everyone cheers you. And he's like, I mean, they came out from the back and they're clapping and like that kind of love. And as he's saying this, and he's trying so hard to be sentimental, like as sentimental as you can be when you've had three bottles of rosé.
And when you're
Steph and Draymond are just behind him, like they're dying laughing at every heartfelt thing he says. It was So good. I just love it. I
can't
like
wait
him,
to do that
him.
To you. When you're giving your ESPY's greatest anchor of all time speech, I'm be on the side. You're going to be near tears trying to thank Alabaster for making you the anchor that you are. And I'm be like,
yeah, cracking up.
I'm going to be supporting you with the number that I want to give this answer, 420% myself. Yes.
Okay.
It was fun. Did you see the little kid who was trying to marry Steph's daughter? That
yeah.
was out there. The fans were wilding too, man. I feel like, but I don't care how old you are, do not ask for the hand in marriage of a baby girl. Like, it's out of control.
She's
with
like
a sign.
Eight. It's
Stop
creepy.
It.
Yeah. Yeah. Like,
yeah, Dominic, you're saying you would not appreciate that if that was your daughter being proposed to?
No.
That's like, you know what? My husband's
like
that.
Parents should have stopped
him.
I know people think it's cute, but no.
Yeah, so you're like Omar. My husband is like, it's creepy when people when Eva holds another four-year-old boy's hand and like the parents will be like, they're going to get married. He's like, they're four. He does not find it to be adorable. He thinks it's weird and creepy. He's like, can you not already sell her off?
I just find it also... I mean, because it's like, it's sexualizing the kids. And I find it weird when people like see kids and like, oh, you're going to be a heartbreaker to like little boys.
I
like,
know.
You're going to be, or tell a girl like, oh, you're going to be a beauty when you grow. Like, just say you're cute and move on. This is kind of gross.
Daddy's going to need a bunch of guns when you get older.
Yeah,
okay?
Stop it. That's a bad bit. It's a bad bit.
I agree. Alabaster, what do you want?
Just a couple things. I need to shed light on one thing, that Pablo got away with just a horrible man in the mirror joke and then sheepishly sipped his seltzer and no one noticed because there was actual other funny stuff going on. But second of all,
actual other funny.
I want to play a clip for you because I have an answer. I don't think Clay had the best Warriors championship performance ever. This is my all-time favorite from 2015.
Draymond, you are such a...
Clay Thompson?
Oh,
yup. Splash Brothers? Yup. Cavaliers? Nope. We won? Yup. They suck? Yup. We here? Yup.
Look at Ross's face.
Nope. Yeah.
She's like, Ross is like, when is this going to end?
So much drunker than I remember him. That clip is so much drunker than I remember. Oh my god!
Oh god! I got a little drunk watching it.
He was also like feeling himself. That's what my favorite part was. He's like, these are bars, man. Look at this structure.
He really was. He was
rhyming. He's rhyming couplets. I'm giving you. Damn.
Yeah, he was in his zone. He was like, let's go to the studio.
Nope.
Oh god! Oh no! I'm almost sad. I'm almost sad that we left enough room to talk about Kyrie. Why?
I don't. Can I just say this about like the rings stuff and like the trophy stuff? Like, I have become such a like Charles Barkley's life is underrated. Like, everybody thinks he never won a ring, therefore he has to be miserable. Meanwhile, he's living like the happiest life of everybody else.
It's the best life.
These parades, though, like, this should be the carrot on the end of the stick for an actual NBA player. Like, incredible. You get to do this. This is better than all of the legacy bullshit we're going to debate about. You get to do this. No one else gets to do this. We should make that a special hallowed place. Yes.
All right, guys. So I think we can actually skip Kyrie. I mean, newspeak for anyone who doesn't know it, just Kyrie was allegedly running his own practices after Steve Nash ran a real practice this past season. But we've talked a lot about Kyrie. Plus, I want to torture Pablo with this.
Yeah,
match.
That's what this is really about.
This is fantastic.
We got a clip for you guys. What are the chances Doc Rivers regrets saying this?
I wanted to ask you, how is James Harden for you? How is he? Are you excited about him?
I'm excited.
Yeah?
Very.
Has he been good for you on the team this last year?
I love him.
You do?
Yeah. Thank you. I'm done.
Oh, you're done?
Yeah.
You think he'll sign to another deal?
Huge deal, yes.
Say again?
Yes.
You will. Good to see you, Doc.
Oh my god. Nothing encapsulates the Doc Rivers experience better than this video, which I both love and hate. It feels like Doc was just coached like on a phone call minutes earlier. When they ask you about James Harden, say that you love him and that you want to give him a huge deal. And he does it on paper. But if you watch the video, it is him like literally being held hostage by a TMZ reporter.
Pablo, he's clearly saying that in jest. He's clear, like, you guys, you can hear it in his tone. He's like, yeah, huge contract.
I don't think I'm going to regret it. So, Pablo,
I
your
know.
Scenario.
It's
hold on. In your scenario, you think James Harden is going to walk into Doc's office
with that
and negotiate
video?
His next contract? No, you told the TMZ lady, huge deal. This deal is just big.
What's going to happen is that the headlines will be made, they will be circulated, and then people are going to watch this video and realize that Doc Rivers means the opposite of everything he just said. Which is just, the reason it's a classic Doc experience is because he can't help but be a compelling person on camera. He can't. Like, that's great video. But he's doing the thing that he should not be doing, despite 0%. Being told, understandably, not to do it.
0%, because do you think Doc regretted when he tried to blame all his players for all the series that he lost in the past? No, he said that. He stood on it. You remember that in the playoffs when people were getting on Doc for blowing series? And he was like, look at that Magic roster. Those guys were bums. Yeah. I was lucky I could get those
Tracy
guys to
McGrady.
Win a freaking game.
The fact they won it all.
I personally don't get how a person of his age who's been around the game for as long as he has understands the way the media works as well as he does, because he's one of the like most well-connected guys from a coaching standpoint in the media there is. So I don't understand how this could be something he could regret, because there's no way that he was surprised by it. There's no way this is a mistake. You think Doc Rivers just emotionally reacted to some random TMZ question on the side, on the street? No. Doc Rivers has been through this before. He knows if he don't want to say nothing, to say nothing. Doc Rivers said that because he wanted to say it. And I don't know what the result's going to be. I guess that means that, I guess it doesn't matter what the result is. The 76ers aren't going to win the championship anyway.
You got, I really do hope nobody makes any, as soon as I saw this clip, I was like, he's messing with her, you know?
Yeah.
First of all, she messed up because as all of us know, as esteemed and established journalists, you never ask a yes or no question. She originally said, how has James Harden been for you? And he went to answer, and then she cut him off and goes, do you like him? And he's like, yes. And she's like, is he? And you love him? Like, he was clearly just messing with her, because he's like, you're just a lady with a camera. You're not a real journalist. The idea that anyone would take that as more than complete and utter sarcasm escapes me. But again, we don't really live in a freaking society that understands those things anyway. It's like, come on, you guys. That was said in jest, Pablo.
Well, this is the thing, right? Like, negative 100% is my answer. He actually enjoyed saying it. He's going to repeat this many times in the future. Because what he told us, though, it was in jest, but he also told us what he really feels, I believe, which is that he didn't enjoy James Harden and he doesn't want to give him a huge deal. Like, I drew the opposite conclusion in seriousness from his jest. All of which is to say that, why is he still the coach of this team? Why? Why is this still happening to me? Alabaster, no one has explained this to me. I was told he was going to be traded to the Lakers, made that trade, and now here we are.
Yeah, it's because they don't want to pay him, right? They don't want to pay him to not be there, and I assume the trade options don't exist. Yeah, and maybe the coach they want is no longer available. Like, there's lots of reasons why.
Yeah, who do you want? If you don't want Doc, who do you want, Pablo? Who do you want to be your head coach?
Most recently, I would love to get Kenny Atkinson, the guy who said that he
who
didn't
just
want
pulled
to
out
for
of Charlotte.
Jordan. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Charlotte might be more attractive destination.
I was going to say, I don't know. I mean, stop acting like you guys are a 10 when really you're just like a Boston 9, which is mostly like a 6.
On how Derek.
Calling us the old guy in the boy band now? That's what we're getting? We're the Daryl Joey Morey, Fatone of contenders?
Daryl Morey took forever to move Ben Simmons. So why do you think he's going to act fast right now? I don't know. He's a slow play type of guy. Feel it out. See what
I think you guys are the Brian Luttrell of the NBA, which is that you do have a featured prominent role. Most people would be shocked to know you are the lead singer, but you still just don't stand out amongst the rest of them, that being Aaron Carter.
That is a sad, sad state.
Right? You're the J.C. Chazé. J.C. Chazé was the lead singer of NSYNC.
That is a
compliment. But when you think of NSYNC, you think of Justin Timberlake, and I think you guys are the J.C. Chazé.
Oh, gosh. I don't know who any of these people are, what any of this means. I know that song Gone that NSYNC had, that thing was jamming. I remember that
Gone is where you went for NSYNC, not Bye Bye Bye?
Bye 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 wasn't jamming. Gone was jamming though.
Not I Want You Back. You're all I ever wanted.
Oh yeah, that got a little knock to it.
Right? Remember?
Yeah, I remember that one.
And guys, most importantly, I successfully sang on the show today, so you're welcome. I do it every time.
Guys, before we end the show completely, we have one extra clip to show you. So we're gonna roll that.
I don't like
the
because you are the man in the mirror. And that's all that matters.
Oh, wow. Look, he thought about it when he took the sip. He's like, I don't think
so
that was
sad.
Good.
You're
He's
so
like, I don't
sad.
Think that was good. Can I be honest? I heard the joke, but I just tried to politely laugh through it. I just tried to pretend like I didn't hear it so that I didn't have to.
I think if you read it on paper, it definitely makes sense.
Better luck tomorrow, Pablo. We still love it.
Yeah, no, if you explain a joke,
if
it's definitely
read it in like
better.
A deposition, it fits perfectly right in the flow of right. your guys'
conversation. Why are we being deposed? What is going on? What happened today?
What did I do?